Ryan Stanton with ASAP Frontline, today featuring our social media panel discussion from Leadership and Advocacy Conference 2017 in Washington, D.C., featuring myself as the moderator, Dr. K.K. Moody, Dr. Howie Mell, and Dr. Alicia Kurtz. A fantastic discussion about the strengths, weaknesses, challenges, and the beginning aspect of getting involved with social media. All right, good morning, everybody. Good snow day. Good snow day. All right, so the goal, and this may very well, you see us getting a lot of stuff going up here, this very well may be an ASAP Frontline podcast coming up, so those that thought they were going to get out early and all that other stuff are still going to get to hear this here in a couple of weeks, so you're not going to be able to escape us. That's me. To give you an idea of what we're going to be, goodness, he put all kinds of stuff in here about me. Good Lord. Wow. All right, so that's some of the stuff I do. If you're in Lexington, you can check that stuff out. If not, it doesn't matter. So the idea today, where the rubber meets the road, the intersection of social media and emergency medicine is a very important topic. And so what we did is when we started talking about this about 6 months ago is wanted to put together some folks that could give us, you know, leading edge stuff, you know, whether it's EM docs or whether it's our younger physicians who are leading the way with social media, or whether it's Howie Mell, who says a lot of stuff about a lot of things on social media. So we're going to do this like the modern age does it. You don't have to stand up and ask your questions. You're welcome to. But we're also going to allow you just to tweet your questions to us, and we'll answer them as we go along. So I'm monitoring up here the Twitter feed. So you see the bottom one there, ASAP SoMe. If you want to tweet a question, you tweet it on up here, and we will try to address it as we go. That way you can ask your question as we're speaking, and then we will try to answer it as we get a chance to answer it. And it is working because I tweeted myself earlier. So if you happen to catch that.
How come that just sounds dirty?
Yeah. We're not going to go there, Howie. We may have to move Howie to another table. So Twitter, at EverydayMed, you can tweet at me, LAC17, of course. We want to make sure that that's tagged and everything so everybody else knows what's going on. And then ASAP SoMe is how I will get these questions and see what's going on. So we've got K.K. Moody, a friend of mine. She's lives where I grew up, where I went to med school. In fact, works in the hospital where I started off many years ago. And so from East Tennessee, you may know her from her efforts with EM Docs, the perpetual optimist and person that will never see without a smile on her face. And even when she's angry, she may still be smiling. She's somebody that's amazingly able to get up at 6:15 every single morning, even when that's still 6:15 in the morning, and do things that are healthy. Oh, by the way, everybody, I stole stuff from your Twitter pages and from your social media. So these are all public things. So this is part of the bad of social media right here. EM Docs, the page. If you don't like this page, if you're not on this page, this is a great time to get on there right now because she is here. She gets so many requests for it. It's hard for her to review them all. Nearly 12,000. Have we crossed 12,000? Because 11,900 and something last I checked. Nearly 12,000 members. And it's a fantastic resource, and we're going to talk about how that has changed emergency medicine, our way to communicate with each other and our peers. Howie Mell, goodness, what is going on there? That's a dark ages. 11,985. All right, the goal. We were going to hit 12,000 by the end of this conference discussion. So there's Howie Mell. Howie Mell is the, I've worked with him ever since I started on the PR committee several years ago, about 8 years ago. He's a great spokesman for the American College of Emergency Physicians and a great leader, also the current PR chair for the college, and always a source of great pictures. This is him. He's a Chicago Cubs fan. Last year, he was actually able to make that public after 100 and something years. All right, Alicia Kurtz, God, I love young people. They got the best pictures on social media. So Alicia, the president of IMRA, incredible leaders, as you can imagine. Anybody who, as a resident, is the president of the Emergency Medicine Residents Association, is an incredible leader. And what we want to bring her there is just like the same reason that some of you more weathered physician have a grandchild or child to run the remote. We need the young person who actually knows about technology and doesn't have to use just one thumb to type everything out on their phone. So thank you for being the young person that can work this remote. Yep, that's what we end up with. Wow. That's your monkey face. Yeah, that worked. Yep. But Alicia's on Twitter as well, so make sure that you follow her. She's relatively new. She just got, I think you got on there this last year. Oh, that's peer pressure. All right, so let's talk about it. We're going to start off with KK and find out what is your bag when it comes to social media.
All right, can you hear me on this? Is this turned on?
No, this one.
This one.
You got more mics than you need.
All right. Can you guys hear me okay? Too loud or just right?
Just right.
Good. Okay. So, Endocs is kind of it's kind of changing as we go. It's sort of evolving into its own thing. I initially started about 4 years ago with just the idea that we would share challenges and joys of practicing in emergency medicine. And it's kind of taken a life of its own. And now, just last week, someone called me, one of the academic chairs, and his name was Richard somebody. I can't even keep track. But he was asking me questions about EMDocs because he was making a presentation for all of the academic chairs' national conference. And he wanted to let me know and how this was affecting education in academic departments across the country. And I was so surprised because I thought it was just going to be this sort of, you know, physician wellness, let's support each other, we have a rough job, we have unrealistic expectations from all directions. But it makes me so happy to see that there's so many uses beyond what I had initially thought it would be. So really, everybody keeps coming up to me, thank you, this is so great, I love it, thank you so much. But really, it's not me at all. All I did was put the forum together, and it's all of you that are on it that have made this amazing. So I'm not going to dominate the time, I'm going to pass the microphone, but we'll be talking more about the things that it does. Oh, by the way, if you decide that you want to be on it and you send a request, please come and tell me so that I can put you on right away, because Facebook only lets me see the most recent 20 requests and then I can't find them. So if it's been a couple of hours, because we get that many so fast, if you request it and within 24 hours you haven't been accepted, cancel it and put it on again. But better yet, just come and get me here and I'll just put you on immediately. I'll look for it immediately, because I go through every physician and make sure that they are in fact an emergency physician. And when you go back to your shop, please, if you put anyone on EMDocs, send me a private message so that I can go and accept them right away.
So KK, where did the idea of EMDocs come from? Where did you, I mean, I know this, you have this burning fire for wellness and health and physician health and preventing burnout. Where did your idea for EMDocs come from, and how did you get it started and the seed planted? Because for anybody to have 12,000 in a relatively new page on Facebook is incredible. I've been working at it for 5 years, and not even 25% of that. So how did you do it, and where did you get the idea?
Well, back in 2013, I think, I was still a resident at Einstein. Go Einstein. I saw that Facebook was starting to have groups. And at that time, I was writing an article for ASAP Now called Parenting in Practice, I think. And at the end of the article, I said, I'm going to form a group so that physician parents can sort of support each other. Because being a parent at the same time as being a resident has its own little challenges. So I put that at the bottom of the article. And I did start one called, I think it was called EM Residents, or EM Physician Parents. I can't remember what the original one was. It didn't take off, though, because I didn't know unlike Alicia, if she'd been there, she could have helped me, but I didn't know how to set the settings so that other people could put their colleagues on. So it was really kind of word of mouth, and it was kind of clunky, and it wasn't able to sort of grow like we wanted it to. It wasn't until later that I discovered this magical little setting where you could put your own colleagues, that you could add your colleagues to the group. So once I changed that setting and told Marco Coppola about it, it caught on like wildfire. I have to really give Marco Coppola a lot of credit because he added, goodness, probably 200 people just in one day. And then because the settings were changed, then they could add their colleagues and they could add their colleagues and they could add colleagues. And that's when the magic started to happen, really.
I got the sneaky note that some people don't know how to tweet their questions. All right, so I want to make sure that everybody pairs up one experienced long-term physician with the youngest person in the room.
And it's not a pound sign.
Yeah, it's not a pound. So actually what you can do is if you have a question and you're not on Twitter, feel free, you can stand up and ask the questions. We've got several coming through right now, and we're going to get to the first batch once we get through the initial questions. But if not, on Twitter, you just have to have the hashtag. Some of you are going to call it the pound number sign. Hashtag ASAPSOME, one word. And whatever you put that in, it's going to show up on my tracking board here. Whatever question that is, you can put anything else on there. It'll show up, and we'll be able to track that and answer the questions. So, again, EM Docs is taking off. It's incredible. We're going to get into some of the strengths and weaknesses of that because you can, especially over the last week or two, can highlight some of the challenges that you're going to face.
Brian,
yes, ma'am.
Can you put up your slide that has the hashtags on the channel?
I'll get to see. Well, Alicia again. Yeah, I got one on there. There you go. And I'll leave that up for now. And as for Twitter, so Twitter, and that's what we're using right now for a lot of the communications. So Facebook, the way you want to consider Facebook tends to be more of a closed friend group, a close group that's tighter knit, that tends to know each other. Twitter is throwing ideas out there in an open room and seeing what happens to them, good and bad. Howie Mel has been somebody who's been very, very active on Twitter, not only from the aspect of educating and informing, but also defending emergency medicine. If you want to pick a fight on Twitter, he's not the guy you want to pick one with, because that apparently Chicago is known. The Chicago area is known for random acts of violence, and he will enact that on you on Twitter. So Howie, tell us a little bit about Twitter, how you got going, and how you utilize that platform in your practice.
So Twitter is the Wild West, okay? I mean, it really is, because the strangest things, good and bad, happen. The way I actually got on Twitter, I was working at a hospital that had a Twitter account, and they would, every 2 hours, tweet these fictional wait times out to the world, and they had about 80 followers. I think most of those were bots, which for those of you who don't know is basically people want to sell you things, so they follow you on Twitter with these automated accounts that keep on offering to sell you Ray-Bans at a discount. And I said to the vice president, I said, you know, we've got to change this. We've actually had people make complaints through Twitter, and we don't respond to them, and we don't put out any content. And he says, that Twitter thing is going to go away. And I said, all right, I'll make you a bet. I said, you have your Twitter account, and I'm going to eclipse you within the next 4 months. And he says, well, yeah, fine. So I did it. I got on. And one of the lessons I learned really quickly talking to a couple people is content is king. And so what I did was I literally posted every day what I called my rules of EMS, and they were just dopey little jokey sayings, you know, if it's wet and sticky and not yours, don't touch it. And posted out like one a day, and all of a sudden there's all these paramedics following me, and then there's all these ER nurses following me, and before long, you know, I wake up one morning, I got 1,000 followers over time. But there's been downsides. I mean, there certainly have been discussions and other things that are haven't been positive. So we can talk about some of those later. But in the interim, yeah, at the end of the day, I got lucky on timing.
So Harry, at Harry Siebold, MD, can you and should you be anonymous on Twitter?
In my opinion, if you're a doctor, no. And here's the reason. When you start out on Twitter, you've got like 10 followers, right? You're going to get your colleagues, your mom, you know, a couple of people are going to listen to you. And if you're anonymous, right, you got to realize two things. Number one, you only think you're anonymous. There are people who can find you and uncover you unbelievably fast if they're so motivated to do so. But the other thing is that when you're first on Twitter, it doesn't really matter what you say, right? Because 10 people are listening. So the problem with anonymous is you start off and you start to tweet things in an anonymous fashion, and you maybe get a little more open or more sharing or more angry than you want to be. And then ZDog picks up one of your tweets and blasts it out to his million followers, and all of a sudden, the entire Twitter universe hates you. And somebody is going to figure out who you are, and it's going to be posted on Twitter. It's called doxing. And whatever. Versus if you do it with a named account, even me, because I'll put my foot in my mouth more than just about anybody in this room, but even me, I sit there, before I tweet, I'm like, ooh, my name's on that. Yeah, no, I'm not going to say that. Yeah. And so I think that the early Twitter experience, if you're anonymous, can lull you into a real scary false sense of security. And therefore, I would recommend, especially as a physician, put your name on it, own it, and do the right thing.
I also believe that if you're trying to go for an anonymous presence on the internet, suggests that you're trying, that you have the thought of saying something that could look poorly on you. And that's the challenge. One of the biggest challenges of Twitter is the Twitter trolls. The internet is full of people who live under bridges who wouldn't face you in a street fight, but they're more than happy to sit under the bridge behind the guise of a firewall and throw darts at you. And so I completely agree with Howie. You need to make sure that it's you that's out there, because if it's you out there, you're going to take responsibility for your own tweets and for your communications, because you don't want to be one of those Twitter trolls that's coming across like that. So, Alicia, where are we? What is the role of social media and the internet base for the future of emergency medicine or future providers?
I think that generally, social media is actually accomplishing two things, especially with young physicians and residents and medical students. And one of them is sort of inherent in its name, right? So it's social. It's a way for people to keep in touch with one another very easily, very fast. This is a day and age that is digital. We don't live near all the people that we know and want to communicate with all the time. It's easier to have a mentor this way. I can follow Jay or Becky from very far away and kind of see what they're up to and follow their path and learn from their experiences without having to be where they are or see them all the time. I can follow people that I met at conferences or friends, and just, you know, it's much easier to keep in touch. So I think the first thing that it sort of is a way to build community without having to be physically in the same place. The other is education. Definitely starting with my age group, and way more so exponentially every 5 years that you go down, the attention span of the modern learner is about the size of a literal, like, soybean. And I think you're starting to see this, like, snippet education, right? So you see a lot of really popular people on things like Twitter or Facebook or FOMED, the whole FOMED movement. Nobody wants to learn for a long time. The days of textbooks are kind of going away, and so it's actually really imperative that for those of us who are interested in educating young learners or ourselves, that we get used to this new model of education. So I think it's both social, advertising, self-promotion, that kind of stuff, community building, as well as an educational piece. Like, this is how medicine is being taught and learned for a lot of people, on shift, on your own, whatever. It's sort of two really important aspects.
We've got two tweets from the tech doc. Spell out that Twitter is a public broadcast medium. Many think it's like Facebook, only people you choose see posts.
No.
And I will get to you in a moment because Facebook is just as potentially dangerous.
Yep.
And I'll tell you why. Not to say that I have a different job, but it may have happened. Docs need to be, and also from the Tampa doctor, docs need to be aware that that shooting off your mouth online may have repercussions on your job depending on who you torque off. And it may not be who you torque off, but it's really more importantly who sees it. And we're going to get into that. And so to spin off of what Alicia was talking about, the idea of the FOMED movement and the education, the ability to communicate, and it's exactly what EM Docs is the ability for us to educate and communicate in real time. I don't know how many listened to the Skeptics podcast, Skeptics Guide for Emergency Medicine, trying to whittle down that time of education from 10 years down to less than 1 year. We're talking about the ability to communicate about up-to-date and the newest research in real time and experiences across the board. So me as a nightologist in Lexington, Kentucky at 2 a.m. can get on there and shoot off a question. What do you think about this? They can shoot something back. Well, this is what we do. And honestly, we're not talking about the response of two people or three people. We're talking about 70, 80 doctors that will respond. So it's just like being in this room practicing with our patients right behind us and me being able to say, okay, here's where I am with this patient. It's new and different. What do you guys think? And everybody can chime in. So it's an incredible way to communicate and learn and educate. And honestly, some of the best pearls I've gotten in the evolution of emergency medicine has come through social media and especially EM Docs.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I agree with you fully. I mean, there are things in my practice I never would have known. I mean, even the way I intubate is tricks that I learned from the guys on London Hems, right? They got great formulas and guides that you can pull up. But I think we have to be really careful about calling it social media, because I think one of the dangers, especially of Twitter, to some degree of Facebook, and some reason that EM Docs is done the way it is as a closed community, is we can't be social. I can't put up every picture of my kids for my in-laws to see under my account that says Doc. There is a different responsibility, and as you point out, the internet trolls exist. You can't mix it. So you gotta literally call it professional media, right? I can put out questions. I can respond to policy. I can do anything I want, but I think the way that the rest of society uses Facebook and the way that we have to as health professionals and the way that the rest of society uses Twitter and the way we have to as health professionals is different, because you if you want to do those sharing things, that you know, have your spouse get an account, because if you're going to put doctor on the top of it, that says something. You know, the famous line from John Oliver about the Dr. Oz show. He says, I don't have a problem with what the Dr. Oz show says. I have a problem with the fact that he says doctor. He says the show should be, you know, hey, this is some stuff about some shit by a guy named Mehmet. And then nobody would have a problem with it. But he put the doctor imprimatur on it, and now that's a problem. And so when we're using social media, we have to be careful to not blur that line if we're putting doctor on it. It's now professional media.
So that's a suggestion. That's a good suggestion. And this is the way that I function social media. So I have my Twitter, which is at Everyday Med. That's what I use for ASAP Frontline, Everyday Medicine, medical-related issues. I've got a personal page on Facebook that's just what I share with my family and friends. And then the professional page, whether it's ASAP Frontline, whether it's Everyday Medicine Stanton MD on Facebook, that is all professional and show and TV and media-related stuff. And so I think it's important to have some of that separation. So let's talk about some of the pros of social media. And you guys can chime in on these. The camaraderie, organizing, advocating, educating, debating. How do you see social media as, just like this conference right here, a great way to advocate and organize?
I think Jay gives a really good example of this when he talked one time about if you call or email, you know, a congressional person, that's, you know, just your one impact. But then if you tweet at them and you look at how many impressions it gets or how many times it gets retweeted, the power of social media to amplify, I think, the thing that you're trying to do, whether it's educate or advocate or any of those things, that it kind of blows up a lot faster than any individual effort that you're going to make. Getting information disseminated quickly to a large audience happens a lot more effectively using social media.
At Becky BP, I'm not sure who that is, but I bet they're sitting in the front row. How has IMRA used technology to build communities like the IMRA Hangouts and Slack?
Right, so I should address, so one thing I will say quickly, the list of what I would consider social media, I think is very different than what most people in this room use. So if I said who has heard of Twitter or who's heard of Facebook, I feel like all of you would raise your hands. If I said who uses Instagram, who uses Snapchat, do you know what Marco Polo is, have you ever had a Vine, I feel like I would lose a lot of people. And I'm old. Like in social media techno world, everyone thinks I'm old. Not to offend anybody who's much older than me, but the technology changes so fast. So I think one of the challenges, and I'm sure this will come up in the cons, is that the social media open access world is humongous. And there is no way that any organization or any individual could keep up with all of it. Unless you're Zach Giroux. He does that. I don't know. If you want advice, talk to him. But IMRA sort of has focused on trying to use a few things that are very community-oriented. We know that in our age demographic and residents and medical students, people love community. They want to feel like they're a part of something meaningful. This is the millennials are the generation of meaning. That's like very important to them, personal stories. And so we use two things that ASAP doesn't really use so far. One of them we use a technology called Zoom, but it's modeled after Google Hangouts. Anybody in here heard of Google Hangouts? Not awful, like maybe a quarter of the room. That's good. So Google is this company, just kidding. in the Google suite of products, one of them's called Hangouts. It's a technology that allows them to have multiple people video interfacing at one time, and then other people can text interface or just watch. So you can submit a question by text, you can just observe the whole thing, you can just listen, or you can be one of the video participants. And so IMRA has organized a few. A recent example is we did one on women leaders in emergency medicine. So Becky and I and one of our members, Sarah Paradise from our education committee, the three of us were on video, sort of talking about different questions that were being live submitted in the text chat column by something like 200 people that were watching this in real time. The whole thing was recorded and then posted to IMRA as almost like a video podcast. We use this for a lot of different things. We've been using it for residency application advice. You could do it on diversity. You could do it on leadership, advocacy, pick a topic. But it's a much more interesting way to learn and to in real time sort of interface. So we're using that a lot. Slack is not so much social media. I think it feels social. It's actually an application, so something that you download and use on your phone or your computer. That's sort of like a joint workspace, like a virtual office. It divides topics into what are called channels. So you could have one on planning LAC or one on, you know, Becky's personal schedule. There'd be a channel that's just Becky and Dean because I'm sure they talk to each other every day. And maybe it's easier than trying to text or call each other all the time. And you can organize it by meeting, by whatever. So we use that as a board to keep our workflow efficient. But we have a social channel in there where we basically have one, it's like a group text messaging where we feel like we know each other. People have a baby, they post a photo of their baby. Christmas comes and we get a photo of, you know, an MM board member with their like 2-year-old with the hair everywhere and the Christmas wrapping paper all over the floor. It just kind of builds that community for us while we're working in a joint space since we're all physically located all over the place. So there are two that we use that I don't think a lot of other people are using.
That brings us to a good one, and we've gotten several questions on that at Jeff W. Davies. Any advice or comments about Instagram? Seems to be more popular in the younger generation, so that's a good question. How do we pick the social media platform?
I think you have to know what you're trying to do and who it is that you're trying to target, and then have somebody young help you figure out who's using each type. So, if, for example, FOMED, tends to do really well on Twitter. The people who are following, who want to hear this, the short educational snippets, are all over the Twittersphere. They're everywhere. And that's like a very well-defined kind of community. Instagram is a lot more like, in my sort of impression, artsy, photo-based, image-based kind of sharing versus, you know, smaller snippets of text with links to more educational material. So I think you just have to pick one or two and just go with it. And you'll build your set of followers and you'll find the right people, but you can't, it'd be really hard to manage all of them and try to attack them all at the same time.
All right, so KK, at actually Dr. J, how can we use social media to combat burnout and isolation among physicians? Because I think this is one of the fantastic things that your page does.
Yeah, I think that's, can you hear me okay? I think that's one of the huge things that has been such a benefit for EM Docs, for me and for pretty much everyone who approaches me at these conferences. Even some folks who are later in their career who've never used Facebook, I've had colleagues come up to me and say, you know, I never did Facebook. I just don't like that. But someone put me on Facebook just so that I could be on EM Docs. And honestly, in my 20 years of practice, I've never felt more supported than I do now. So it's just a difference of, so many of us don't have spouses that are in medicine. And so if you go home and you tell your spouse or your children or your neighbor or your best friend who's not in medicine what just happened, and you know what I'm talking about, when you have one of those really horrific days at work, if you have a pediatric code, or if you have something really awful, or if it's just a full moon Monday, or if you have 20 patients boarding for psych beds, you know what I mean? If you go home and talk about this, sometimes people don't understand. And there's just so much power in the camaraderie and just feeling supported when you can put it out there in a network, and you know that there's so many people there that will just come back and say, I get it. Gosh, that happened to me today. It was a full moon. And 50 other people, yes, it's a full moon Monday. It was terrible. So it feels so great to be able to do that. And sometimes people will say terrible things happen and then there's this support. But then the thing that really makes me feel better too, and other people have said this to me as well, is when somebody comes on and says, wow, I had the greatest experience at work today. It was amazing. And then they'll briefly tell a HIPAA compliant story. And then everybody feels better about it. And then people will comment, oh my gosh, yes, that's why we do what we do. Yes, keep going. That's what makes all the night shifts and working days and weekends and nights and holidays and being away from the kids and all the sleep deprivation. That's what makes it worth it. And oh yeah, that's why I love what I do for a living. It's an honor and a privilege.
Does anybody else think that ASAP 17, when we're back here in the fall, should have KK on a speaker at night reading his bedtime story? You have the most soothing voice.
I have five children. I have five kids. I have a lot of practice in saying, calm down. And then when it gets really bad, I'll say, don't make me pull this car over. I'll pull this car over and everybody gets out.
Don't make me turn around. All right, so Howie, several people have asked we're considering Twitter. How does somebody, and you somewhat got into that, how do you get started? We've had a couple of folks say, you know, get new into it, got a new account, the page feed is blank. How do we get started on a Twitter account if that's what you need to do, and then immediately text ASAPSOME and text us your question, or will be your first tweet.
So that, and actually, that's exactly how to do it. I mean, when you look at Twitter, find the person that is using Twitter that's motivated you to get on, whatever that might be, whether it's this conference, whether it's somebody that you work with, whatever it might be, go to their account and you can actually see who they follow. And I'm willing to bet that if they have enough influence in your life that they have gotten you to go on Twitter, that the people that they get a feed from are probably some of the same folks that you want to get a feed from. And so you can go there and just click all there, and I'm now realizing how many embarrassing ones I probably have in mind. But you can go in there and you can actually follow all of whoever they follow or the topics that you like. And that's one way to start. And then you engage those in conversations, right? Somebody says, I like the Chicago Cubs, and are you kidding? I'm a Yankees fan, you know. And a dialogue gets going, and people who dialogue with you will follow you back. In all honesty, you have to put something out there that people want to hear. There has to be some content, right? Some people will all automatically have a voice. You know, if you're the president of ASAP, there's going to be people who are going to follow you because you're the president of ASAP. But if you're not, and you're trying to develop a Twitter feed, you have to show that you have something to say, or people aren't going to listen. So that's literally the best way to do it. Is to find that person that you have similar interests to, and scroll through their follows. Or the other thing you can do is hashtags as well. Like if you're an EMS person, you do hashtag EMS. You're going to see a bunch of different people who tweet fairly regularly on EMS. Or FOMED, or whatever it might be, and you can grab them that way too.
IRFS Advocacy MD, there's a couple of good ones to follow right there. They're sitting right beside each other in this room. So Advocacy MD, I'm not sure how at MD Aware is simultaneously tweeting, periscoping, and curating my tweets. That's Twitter expert. ASAP SOMI, LAC17.
Seth's got four hands.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
So Seth, who's at council, your picture will pop up with him, and those are a couple of fantastic leaders here. Let's get into some of the potential pitfalls. So give you an idea on my story. I was probably one that was pretty early into social media and Facebook. And I was one that was fully aware of the potential backlash of HIPAA. You know, you need to make sure that whatever you put on there is HIPAA compliant. And I'm sure KK could tell you all about those struggles with the EM Docs page. But I would post frustrations about the emergency department. Oh my gosh. I just had a whole family of five sign in to get checked out for bed bugs. Great, now there's six people in this room with bed bugs. And whatever frustration there was, I would tweet about it. And everybody got all kinds of entertainment and excitement about it. But what you are as the physician is a leader in your hospital, in your emergency department. And you're going to be held to a different standard. And so what ended up happening is the hospital where I was working, the chairman of the department had one of the staff members print off my Facebook feed every day and show it and put it on his desk so he could review it. We were not friends. He did not have an account. But it was used against me later when it said, when there was anything that popped up of any question whatsoever, they said, oh, you had somebody complain in the ER and your Facebook, you mentioned blah, 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 blah. And so you have to be very careful. And I know Howie's got a couple of similar type stories where you have to be careful, because there is nothing, even when you think your Facebook page is your own personal private property page, there's nothing about the internet that's private. And even if you think you delete it, it still exists. So just like the Snapchats, just like your tweets, just like your Facebook posts, even if you delete them, they are still out there. Even if somebody doesn't screenshot them, they are still out there and can be searched. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about some of those potential risks associated with it. Howie, let's start with you. What with Twitter? Twitter is especially challenging when it comes to the potential pitfalls.
So there's a couple of things that have happened fairly recently on Twitter, and to EM and to some EM students. And I'm actually not going to cover the big psychology today one, because that one's kind of obvious. But there is a movement called MedGirl Twitter, and it's a collection of medical students in their fourth year Most of them are third year, and it's actually somewhat of a hilarious feed to read as these folks are getting proposed to by patients and you know, have what seems to be some common experiences and from a viewpoint that I had never even considered. So I read it, it's entertaining. And I came to get to know one of these med students who reached out to me personally, and we developed a correspondence, we worked on a paper together, and she's a rock star. Absolutely rock star, I will guarantee you she matches to her number one. But she's under an anonymous account. And she made a passing reference. She said, you know, I'm in the hospital cafeteria watching parents buy pizza for their fat kids. Now, not the best thing to say. Okay? Not defending the comment. The immediate and violent backlash to this relatively anonymous account of a med student who made a stupid comment that we have all probably made or thought and then checked it before we said it publicly was unbelievable. And literally, there were doctors who were tweeting out, we should figure out who you are, call your school and have you fired, you should never match into a residency, you know, if this is the type of doctor you're going to. This was her after a long shift posting something that she didn't think better of. And it got to the point that there was actually a faculty member from a medical school in Canada that I was tweeting with, and I said, hey, listen, if she's a student, if you think the comment was wrong, tell her why it was wrong and teach her. Don't insult her. And he literally wrote back, I can insult her and teach at the same time.
You deleted out a couple of there were some mean words.
There were some meaner words that aren't worth repeating. So you have to really be careful, because what to her was an innocuous statement, or even trying to be funny but not realizing how it would be taken, really went off the rails. And it doesn't necessarily need to be something that bad. There is a named account, I won't reveal it here, but of a second year resident, and when some of the political things happened with regards to residencies that have occurred recently in our profession, he made a comment that I've heard probably two or three dozen attendings make regarding the situation. He wasn't wrong. It wasn't a biased comment, but he was saying it as a second-year resident at a very conservative program, and within about 12 hours, his Twitter feed was dead, and he was no longer on social media at all. And I know personally, and you know, he got called into his program director's office and right up one side, down the other, because it wasn't his place as a second-year resident at one program to comment on broader troubles here. So you have to be cautious, because you never know. It takes one wrong person. You know, you tweet out a comment that could be a little snarky about a nurse, Katie Duke reposts you, that's the end of your Twitters. I mean, you know, there's going to be 200 people blasting you in about 30 seconds. And so you have to be cautious.
I just want to chime in on that as well. During the election, we had about 8,000 on EM Docs, and I thought that EM Docs was over. I thought it was going to implode, because there were most of them, I would say probably 7,980, were just sort of listening and still talking about sharing EKGs and sharing stories and supporting each other. But there were a few people that were saying extreme things, and then some people were saying extreme things on the other side. And my comment back was, please remember that what you say here, before you post it, take a few deep breaths, reread it, and imagine yourself standing up in front of ASEP with the entire audience. Are you willing to say those words that you're about to post? It's not private. It's 8,000 people at that time. Still, the banter went back and forth. I was so happy when the election was over and things sort of settled down.
So, Alicia, we talked they both got into one of the bigger concerns with social media, and that's the trolls, the sniping, the attacks. Can you get into a little bit more of what to expect and how the Twitter sphere especially is a different environment than what you would have sitting in a room across from a table?
I think the best way to describe this phenomenon is, have any of you ever read any political article on the internet and then continued to read the comments? Right? Or any YouTube video and then read the comments? And I'm sure we've all thought the thought, are you for real? Right? Like, how could somebody say something like that? That is going to happen to you. Period. That is going to happen. It's going to happen to you. Whether you mean it to or not. Because the internet is the most reactionary place in the stratosphere. And no one, like, people are going to disagree with you even if you say something extremely benign. People are going to spin your words. They're going to misinterpret your picture. Because everyone is on the internet. Everyone. Including all those people, the snipers, the trolls, who live in the comments on YouTube. That's like where they live, in that mess, and they're going to find you. So I think there are a couple of things that you need to know. One is, first of all, don't be that person. It's kind of like, you know, I lean one direction politically. I'm young, so I feel you could guess what that is. My grandparents don't lean that way. I don't talk to my grandparents about why I think they should vote for X, Y, or Z person because I'm not going to change their minds, right? I'm not going to. I don't post on Twitter or on EM Docs or on wherever things that I know are only going to cause problems and are not going to change people's minds. There is nothing you will ever put in Twitter or in the internet stratosphere that is going to convince people that you are right. It's just not going to happen. So I think once you accept that, that's really good. The second thing is, don't be reactionary. So don't let yourself be that person. And if somebody is reactionary to you, let it go. It's really, really hard, I think, not to feed into the, like, you want to rebuttal and you want to defend yourself and you want to get into this game like, no, that's not what I meant. You know, and I think in some circumstances you have to clarify when things are really ugly, but let the trolls be the trolls and, like, don't let them troll you. So you just, like, stay on this different level. Just like in your regular life as a physician, I think you're held to a different standard by everyone. That's the same, very same thing on Twitter or anywhere online.
But I don't want to overdo the risks.
We got to hold on one second. Where's James Gilbert? You in here? Welcome to Twitter. There you go. New account, first tweet was, hey, that's so me.
Yes.
And you got your young people. Strong work, strong work. That's the way this works. The struggle's real.
I don't want to overstate the risk. I'm worried that we're sitting up here and we're telling you all these horrible things that can happen, these hundreds of people that will attack you from under the bridge and all the rest. There is an incredible power in social media used professionally. I literally have been able to consult people in the middle of the night in a HIPAA-compliant way. Like, you know, kid with status epilepticus, which is a more effective anti-seizure medication, propofol or phenobarbital as a maintenance drip? There's nowhere for me to look that up, but I'll tell you what, put that out on Twitter, and I will have 20 responses inside of 15, 20 minutes. I've had to find papers that I couldn't find. Hey, does anyone have a copy of this paper? I got three PDFs in 5 minutes. And even learning new things, right? So I now intubate using fentanyl, ketamine, and rocuronium because it's what the London HEMS guys do, and they convinced me to try it once, and I love it. There are people that I know that you and I are both in regular contact with who literally live across the world, and we will probably never meet in person, but you'd almost call them a friend for as often as we talk. So I don't want to scare anyone away with the risks. What I'm telling you is it's a lot like playing a contact sport, right? There are risks. You can get a concussion, you can break your arm, but it's a lot of fun to play.
And there's a lot of camaraderie.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, let's get into that. I've seen some it popped across as a tweet. There seems to be getting a lot of getting nervous, fear about social media, and it's really not that. I mean, you know, we love it. A lot of people love it. We clearly have. We feel like there's a lot of benefit from it. So let's start down here. How do we build a positive, productive, constructive social media presence?
Well, just like everything that we do every single day when we go into the emergency department, you always have to weigh the risks and benefits of everything. And certainly I've found, and many people have found, that the benefits far outweigh the risks of being on Twitter and finding out the new information, or being on EM Docs and being able to have at 4 a.m. 100 people give you information. I see this patient, I've tried XYZ, XYZ, what am I missing? And then 100 people send you articles, and oh yeah, that's great, that's amazing. So I think you just have to realize what you're getting into and go in like an informed consent. Realize that you have to think about what you post, but put the questions out there. Oh, we see we have 10 minutes. Is that correct? 10 minutes left. Okay.
Just
be mindful. Be the professional that you are. Enjoy the camaraderie and the support. But don't put anything out there that you wouldn't say in a room full of 8,000 colleagues.
I think it's an extension of you. I think if you just think about your social media as being an extension of you, then it's not that scary and it's not that hard. There are people in your real life that get mad at what you say. There are people online who get mad at what you say. There are tons of amazing people who augment your life and make your life better and enrich your life and teach you and mentor you. The same is true in social media. So I think you just have to treat it like as if you're standing in the middle of your ER being you. That is also true when you're using social media in the best ways and in the same professional standard type ways.
Yeah, and I think that's the key to it. If you're a professional in what you do, you can ignore the troll that pops up. And that's the other thing, by the way, if you ever do get into a situation where you do have somebody who's obviously just angry about something, don't respond.
Okay? Especially on...
Well, they're baiting you. Yeah. I mean, it's the Mark Twain quote, right? Never wrestle with a pig in the mud because he'll drag you down to his level and beat you with experience. Okay? If you engage a troll, this is what they do. They sit there on the computer trying to fight with people. Ignore them.
Especially true on EM Docs, because every time someone responds to something that's, you know, crazy, you know, up there, it moves the thread to the top. And then it inflames more people and more people see it. So the best thing you can do if someone is trolling is don't engage. Ignore them and they will go to the bottom of the feed.
And there is a feature on Twitter where you can block somebody. Yes. I don't want to see a darn thing that person says. Block them. We're done. For all I know, there's a ton of people on Twitter that I have blocked who are currently just ripping me to shreds, and I don't care.
Are they in this room?
Probably. We're set.
All right, let's push right here.
Well, the beautiful part about retweeting is it's not necessarily my comment. So there's a thing on Twitter where if somebody says something, like this nurse who made the comment, I'm going to explain it to you again. We Narcanned your honor student. And I retweeted it. It just shows that that person's comment. And to be honest, there are things that I will retweet for the purpose of pointing out the ridiculousness of it. And maybe put a commentary like, "Oi, really? Or can you believe this?" Or whatever else. Because it's not all, it's not necessarily good or bad. And the kind of accepted construct of Twitter is that a retweet or even a like is not necessarily an endorsement of the comment, but may be used to further the discussion, may be used because you're marking the page to use in a later talk. There's a lot of things that it could be. And I agree with you. There are people that definitely wouldn't find that comment. And if you go back through my feed, there are a ton of comments, some by me, that may offend some people. I put my foot in my mouth on a regular basis. It's all right. I've gotten used to the taste.
And so, you know, wrapping up here, getting towards the end, I think we can use social media for the betterment of emergency medicine, the betterment of our careers, the fulfillment of our careers, for our health, for our longevity. You know, me at night at 3 in the morning being able to communicate with ER doctors in Australia, ER doctors in Tennessee, wherever folks may be, it makes my life better. Also, being connected on Facebook with friends that are outside medicine, realizing there is a real world that doesn't involve blood and guts and Jacob. It's refreshing to see folks enjoying Saturday and Sunday, not having to be at work and having life outside. My suggestion is pick you a platform that you are comfortable with for what you want to get out of social media. If it's Facebook, looking for friends and families, lost contacts that you can get around and share pictures and show where your life is going. If it's Twitter, being able to debate rapid sequence intubations or being able to debate the new RSI drugs, to see discourse and comments and things strolling through. For Twitter, follow some great people. There's about 10 in this room right now that should be on your list of folks that you follow. Follow them. There's great information, great education, great motivation for your practice. If you have other platforms, just think about what you are looking for in terms of your social media experience. Remember, there's nothing that's private. Even a private page is not private. Theoretically, there have been lawsuits to protect you that say they are private, but there's a lot of money, a lot of time, you still lose your job. So make sure that you're aware that it is not private, that it is a public platform even when it's a protected page. Think twice about what you tweet or what you post because it reflects you and your organization. Do not have your hospital's name on your page if you're going to give opinions. They will come back. They will find it. And then finally, be civil. Don't say anything on the Twitter or Facebook that you wouldn't be willing to say to somebody's face. We're not going to be able to fix the world when it comes to trolls and people trying to landmine, but as emergency physicians, we can be the ones that can bring common sense and education and motivation and health to the internet and to social media, because it's something that we can use as a profession to organize ourselves as a profession, to make changes, to communicate with lawmakers, to help each other be better positions, even if you're in the middle of nowhere, 500 miles from the local closest tertiary care facility. So it's a great thing that we can do. We just want you to be very careful with it and not fall into some of those traps that we have fallen to, that I have fallen to especially. And as we move forward, we welcome you at any point to come to us. We will help you get things set up. Any questions that you have moving forward, and as KK, thank you. Howie, thank you. Alicia, thank you. Wonderful folks, great leaders in emergency medicine. They can help you get on the right track when it comes to social media. Thank you very much.
And that wraps up our panel discussion from Leadership and Advocacy Conference 2017 in Washington, D.C. I appreciate all of those who helped put it together and participated. I think it turned out pretty nice. We really enjoyed it, and I think we passed on some good information. I invite you to like the ASAP Frontline Facebook page. That way you know when our new episodes are coming out and the topics. Also invite your comments and suggestions at youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com. That's youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com. And follow me on Twitter @everydaymed. Until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASAP Frontline.